Do you struggle to find the time and energy to consistently eat healthy? Well, you're not alone, especially during these COVID times, but we've got a solution for you. Introducing a company from just up the street in Chicago, Illinois, Factor. Factor is the all-in-one meal delivery service that preps, cooks, and delivers fresh, never frozen, fully prepared meals directly to your door every week. With Factor, every single meal is designed by dietitians and handcrafted by world-class chefs, keeping your taste buds happy and your waistline trim. What's more, the menu changes every single week, so you never lose interest in eating healthy. Right now, Factor is offering our listeners of the Outlap F1 podcast $50 off their first 2 weeks. Just go to factor75.com, pick your meals, and use code podcast50 at checkout to claim this limited time offer. That's factor75.com, code podcast50.
John, it's James. Warm up the tires and turn up the engine because it's time to start the Outlap F1 podcast. From the Sports Talk Garage Network studio in Chicago to the best fans from around the world, join us every week for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 47 of the Outlap F1 podcast. This is another year-end deep dive review episode. I am your host, James, along with the wonderful co-hosts I have, Andy and John. Unfortunately, Deanna will not be with us tonight, but we expect her back for the finale in about a week's time to review the next few teams. So before we get into anything, quick reminder, you can find us on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, and Reddit, assuming we're still out of jail, at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. Of course, the website is still www.outlapf1.com. Make sure you check that out. See a bunch of our blogs from Sophie Middleton from the past season. See our newest updates to the podcast episodes. And, of course, all of our Twitter stuff is on there as well. Convenient place for you. If you're new to F1, I would suggest you go back to F1 for Beginners episode. That was Season 2, Episode 10. We'll be refreshing that here probably before we know it. To get ready for the 2021 season there as well. You can also check out the Relapped podcast on YouTube. That's Deanna's little side project. Really good stuff. She's going all the way back and watching all the F1 races from every season she can find on the interwebs. And if you want to help support the show, you can do that via Anchor with any kind of donation you'd like, monthly, $1, $5, $10, whatever you want. We will take any and all donations and be very, very grateful for them. Help us upgrade some of this equipment and keep this show rolling. Along with that, we do still have a sponsorship with Manscaped. You can go on their website, use the code OUTLAP, that's one word, OUTLAP, to get 20% off and free shipping. Anything you do on that website and use our code is really going to go far to help out the show and keep sponsors coming to us. Now that we got that all out of the way, maybe a somber episode. For our Chicago Bears fans, not that it was unexpected, but no. Sometimes you're a highly paid professional athlete getting paid millions of dollars to play a game and you can't catch a ball that's in the proverbial breadbasket at an opportune time. So
I officially christened my new furniture with the official "What are you doing?" punch to it today. Like I kept telling everybody the whole weekend, I'm like, I'm not going to get emotionally invested in this game. I know they're a massive underdog, and then that happens, and I think I lost it. So, well, I mean, to my neighbors who probably heard the rant, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be fine. The amount of shit talking that we've been getting all week as Bear fans. I mean, dropped three interceptions last week, and then you don't bother to do shit this week. You drop a wide open pass in the end zone. I don't even know how many penalties we had tonight. It was
jumping offside.
Yeah. Literally game changing penalties. It's just, I'm like, why do I even put myself through this bullshit every year? But I'll be back next year for the same old bullshit. So
I already can't wait.
Out front.
In the meantime, I'm now officially a member of the Bills Mafia. But yeah, I can't wait for 2021, so I'm an idiot, but we all are.
Thank God for Premier League soccer. At least my Tottenham Spurs are doing a little something there. Keep me busy for the next couple months until baseball.
Yeah, Well, we can argue about that when the time comes.
Yeah, at least one of our teams will actually be doing something next year.
Oh boy! All right, so back on track here with actual Formula One talk on a Formula One podcast, if you can believe that. Let's get into some news. Start off with Aston Martin. They are now officially Aston Martin. What was once Racing Point is now Aston Martin. Cool green coming to the grid shortly, but they now have a title sponsor, and that is Cognizant. Cognizant is a name I kind of recognize. It's an American company, but I had to look it up. It's actually an American multinational product-led digital corporation that provides digital products, digital IT services, a bunch of other digital stuff. So, yeah, don't really understand what they do, but they had a $16.8 billion revenue in 2019, so must be good work. But it is cool that they are the title sponsor for Aston. It's just more money coming into a team that had gotten really good at, having a penny go a mile or however that saying goes. So just more money coming in for the team. Now they might actually be able to come up with their own concept for their next car instead of just tracing Mercedes' old one. But what do you guys think? You excited to see a title sponsor associated with Aston?
Well, I mean, I think it's good that, obviously healthy teams are a good thing. And this is a team that, 3 years ago was in that British administration process. So to go from that to here, I also think we're seeing a bit of a power shift. That these are probably going to be the second deepest pockets in the sport is what it looks like. So this is a good thing for competition overall, competition possibly to Mercedes. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do. Obviously we've got, a very interesting driver lineup. They've got Vettel, they've got Lance Stroll. It's all going to be, they've set themselves up for success. It's just going to be, can they execute it? And that's going to be the question, but it's good to see this.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
Oh, you got something, John?
Yeah, I was just saying, I'm excited about it. I mean, another big thing for us, obviously, as Americans, is having another American company investing heavily into the sport. I think is cool as hell. They're certainly not new to sporting sponsorships. I'd seen that name quite a bit, and when I started thinking about it, I know they've done a lot with like FIFA and sponsoring a lot of the different cups things. And so I've seen that name before. So it's cool as hell to have a technology company. We've seen quite a bit of that in a recent push of tech companies joining F1 recently. And then obviously the recent push of Americans is cool as hell. So I'm excited about it. Has there been any word on if they're going to continue to sponsor with our partnership with BWT?
I've heard that they were going to take a lesser role. Obviously, they're not going to be a title sponsor. And whether or not we see any pink mixed with the green, I think is
yeah, that's why I asked.
I think that's kind of up in the air still. So, yeah, I don't know if we have the watermelon just yet.
Yeah, they teased the driver suits a little bit this week, and I didn't see any pink anywhere in sight. So, it was just a small shot, only got a little bit of the collar, maybe a little bit of the shoulder, but I didn't see any kind of like pink, trimming or anything like that. So I'm kind of hoping that the pink is making its exit, but yeah, I just don't know how pink and green is going to go together, but I'm looking forward to that pink car. The deliveries that some of the third-party guys that I put out there are so badass. So,
yeah, agreed.
The thing is with those are always – they always look better than what the final products always are. So I always go, why don't they hire some of these guys? Because it's incredible talent out there if you actually look for it.
Definitely. And speaking of liveries and some that might be changing, with the news that we already knew about Renault transitioning into being the Alpine F1 team, we got a little teaser video, actually, of their next season's livery. The yellow is gone. Some refer to it as the iconic yellow. But now it's going to be red, white, and blue, which are colors that we can definitely get behind. Just barely saw it quickly in the video, but I thought it was a pretty cool concept. I think the colors really pop. It should definitely be a better look, in my opinion, than the yellow. I wasn't a huge fan of that. What do you think about Alpine coming in, John?
I guess I'm excited for it. It doesn't really make a whole lot of difference to me. Just kind of a rebranding. I'm not exactly thrilled about having potentially another predominantly blue car on the grid. To me, it looks a lot like Toro Rosso's colors, like at least from the front that I've seen of some of the teasing. So I'm not entirely thrilled about. I was hoping for a little bit more of a shakeup there, just to help tell cars apart a little bit easier. Got a lot of white. We got a lot of blue. So
I was today years old when I found out that John is clearly colorblind, because I don't see it it looking like the AlphaTauri so much. The AlphaTauri to me was like that darker blue.
No, not the AlphaTauri. The Toro Rosso.
Oh, the Toro Rosso. Okay.
Yeah, see, you got to listen. If you listen, you're with
me. I just assumed you were saying the wrong thing and called it by the wrong name.
That's what you get for using your brain, buddy. That tells you every time.
Yeah, you're right. So some not so great news or exciting news. Australia and China, both those Grand Prix, not looking good currently. You know, we kind of hoped that we had moved past all this 2020 stuff, but in reality, there is still a pandemic going on. It looks like they're for sure not going to Australia now to start the season, which is a huge bummer. Side note, they better start there in 2022, because I still plan on being there for that. But they're trying to push that towards the end of the season. That's going to be a logistical nightmare, I'd have to figure. So hopefully that still happens. I do want to see them racing on the streets of Melbourne at Old Albert Park there. But the Chinese one is the newer one. Now there's rumors swirling that may need to be postponed as well, also towards the back half of the year, which will present some other scheduling conflicts for China with some other events that they've got already pushed back. But just not a good way to start, I'd say. We know that Formula One did a good job last year of being really dynamic and able to change the schedule. And we got so many races in unexpectedly last year. But, I mean, you can't be happy with these early signs, can you, Andy?
Well, no, these are not encouraging signs, but a lot of it has to do. I mean, the fact of the matter is you have a ton of logistical dominoes that you can't start. You can't start one falling like you did last year and expect things to go smoothly. So especially with Australia, just because it is as far away from everywhere else that they go as it is. And the fact that the Australian government has a mandatory 2-week quarantine. So if they wanted to run the race in March, the way that it is now, everyone would have to fly in and stay in the country for 2 weeks. That's a logistical nightmare. There's 1,500 minimum staff and you know, drivers and pit crews and all that stuff that are going to be in there. So that's a huge ask. That's a huge cost. I understand. And not to mention, for the Australia on the venue side, they have to build the track.
They got to build it.
Yeah, they haven't built it yet. So they can't start that process until they know this thing is happening. So it's not surprising given where just the global COVID numbers are. I mean, you know, to all our folks out in the UK, you know, stay strong. I mean, you're in the worst lockdown than we are here. You know, just it's annoying. We have to figure out a way to get through it. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that China's also up there to have, you know, that's an early season race that could pose a lot of logistical dominoes as well. So it sounds like what they're going to do is they're going to move testing back to kind of almost where the Australian Grand Prix was. That would happen in Bahrain, and then they would start the season in Bahrain. This way everyone is in that effective bubble for a while. So we're going to have a season. We're going to have lots of racing this year. Just a question of when and how we can get all this logistic stuff taken care of.
Andy, you've been working on your transitions, haven't you? Because that was a really nice one to bring us into the next item, and which is Bahrain testing. So it looks like probably not going to have it in Spain. I don't know if it's official yet, but they're definitely talking about the dates they could do it in Bahrain. By rule, it would need to be finished by March 16th, 10 days before the start of the season. But obviously the start of the season could probably still be moved if need be to make things easier. But yeah, I mean, testing, I'm not going to miss it being in Spain. I think Spain's a good testing track, I guess, but I'm just not a fan of the track overall. It'd be cool to see it somewhere different. Bahrain would just be a lot more convenient for the team since they're already going to have to be there for the start of the season. But then that's kind of the same issue. You know, it could have been 2 weeks in Australia for waiting for the quarantine to pass. But so now you're going to be in Bahrain for almost 2 weeks, or I guess maybe less of the team would have to go then. But what do you think about testing being somewhere different, John?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. Like you said, I don't mind Spain being as a testing track. But the weird thing is, it seems like as of, you know, last few years or so, the weather has been really odd in Spain during that time of the year, and it's kind of shook things up. Didn't it snow or something like that a year or two ago, something like that? So I mean, I think from that standpoint, Bahrain is you know, a great spot. Me personally, I'd love to have
a Bahrain normal circuit and a Bahrain outer circuit and have testing there. We just hang out for a whole fucking month in the country because I think that'd be cool as hell. I think, any street circuit, quote-unquote, I think it's going to be in danger this year. I would not be shocked, unfortunately, to see Singapore get dropped again. Monaco is definitely going to be an issue. I don't know what Azerbaijan's numbers are or, you know, how serious they're taking the virus, but that could certainly be on the tables as well to get squashed there. So, I'm not opposed to Austria. I like Austria, you know, as a track, but it doesn't always produce the best racing in the world. So I'm not opposed to shaking it up and having a month in Bahrain.
Yeah, that's
To me, part of what makes Australia great for me, at least, is just the atmosphere of the fans. And that's what that ultimately, I think, is the goal here. I know we're talking about, you know, obviously with COVID and everything, they want to have fans on in the stands, on the grounds. And if they have to futz with the calendar to do that, I'm for it.
Yeah, for sure. It's a bummer.
Yeah. And remind me, guys, like who was it? Whose decision was it to officially cancel the race last year? Was that the FIA's or was that the government of Melbourne? I feel like it was the FIA's when they had, was it McLaren?
They were going to go forward with it. It was the FIA with Formula One. And then reluctantly, the Australian government went along with it. They wanted that race to go ahead because they built everything. They'd already spent all that money.
So they can't, you know, that relationship has got to be in a little bit awkward situation right now as it is. They can't be burned again.
Right.
So
exactly.
I think moving them to later in the year or postponing them entirely, I mean, that would suck. But I think it's probably a better case to just bump them back till, you know, late summer or something like that.
Yeah. So continuing in the vein of pandemic news, Andy, what happened to your boy?
Mr. Lando Norris has put out a statement that I guess he felt some loss of taste and smell, which if you don't know what that means he has contracted coronavirus. He was on holiday in Dubai. So I was kind of in his own bubble. So not sure what the circumstances is. Apparently he's in decent health. Otherwise, other than those two symptoms, he hasn't, you know, I haven't seen any, elevation of his symptoms or anything like that out on Twitter or anywhere else. He obviously hasn't posted anything since then. So his 2 weeks would have started, I think, Tuesday. Again, just hoping that he gets recovers well, recovers fully, and can get on with it once this is over for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Andy, if you'd seen anything, because last time I looked on Twitter and Instagram, it had been about a week or so since the last post. So, hopefully that's a good sign. You know, there hasn't been any, obviously, bad updates, but there hasn't been any good updates either. So it's a little nerve-wracking.
Well, I can't imagine he's going to want to be tweeting or, you know, posting from inside, you know, the Corona sphere.
He's on F1 2020, just gaming, playing that in FIFA with, you know, so I'm sure he's gaming 18 hours a day and trying to relax as much as possible.
Well, I mean, I would hope. I mean, he had planned some downtime anyway. I mean, I know like his last Twitch stream, he had mentioned that kind of after the season that he was going to take some time off. That's what he was doing when this happened. So, we'll just have to kind of watch it, keep on, you know, to see if we get any updates. Hopefully within the next week or so, you know, he'll kind of come out of that and can get back at it. He's going to probably have to do some strength training, as we obviously saw, with the Lewis situation. You know, he lost a ton of muscle just, you know, over the course of a couple of weeks. So, you know, that's part of, he's going to have to probably hit the weights really, really hard just to build up his neck muscles and everything as he gets close to testing, because it's going to be on us soon.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully a quick recovery for Lando. So moving on to Mercedes, John. Well, there's actually no news, which is kind of weird. So still waiting on a contract with Lewis Hamilton. What have you been hearing on that end?
Yeah, so I haven't heard anything that like officially from Lewis's mouth on this, but rumor has it that he has four demands for his contract. Some are not surprising and some are a little unique. Take that with a grain of salt. But the supposed rumor is that he's asking for $35.5 million, which would be the most in F1. I'm not shocked by that.
Is it
least a bit?
Is that pounds?
That's euros.
Euro.
Actually, that yeah, that could be pounds. It may be pounds. Yeah, probably is. Yeah, so sorry, I misspoke on that one. I forgot about Brexit over there. He wants this one's a little unique. Supposedly he wants 10% of the share of Mercedes prize money if they happen to win 8 straight constructors championships. That I've never heard of before. And there's also been a rumor that the prize money may potentially get cut a little bit in 2021, which could then impact the 10%. Which is probably the only reason that whoever wrote the story actually put it out there. But, yeah, so that's a little interesting. He wants he wants to be gifted a Mercedes AMG One car, which is their new hypercar. He actually has been pretty instrumental in the development of that car, so I figured they were going to give him one anyways. I think they're only making 250. I just figured number one was the Lewis Hamilton edition, or maybe the 44th.
I was going to say I would assume he would want the 44th one off the line.
Yeah, maybe that's
he doesn't do the whole number one thing.
Yeah, that's true. And then the last thing is that he apparently wants a more hands-on technical type role with the team, to be more involved in decision-making at a team level as opposed to just himself and his own strategy. So, again, don't know how factual those four things are, but guys, anything freaky out or anything blow your mind?
The only thing that kind of surprised me, I guess, is the 10% share of the winnings. Like, I mean, that seems like it'd be pretty high amount, but I just maybe just assumed that most drivers would have, you know, those kind of bonuses built into their contracts that, like, if they win the driver's championship, they get more money, or if the team wins this, they get more money. So maybe that isn't actually normally part of their contracts, but kind of threw me for a loop a little bit. 10% seems like a pretty big chunk, but I mean, he's in the driver's seat there.
I wonder if it's how they've written this out. Like, I mean, I would expect to have some kind of, like you said, a bonus, you know, situation. You win the drivers, win X number of races, what yada yada, get a certain bonus on top. This one's definitely written in a very, very unique way, and it is supposedly contingent on them actually winning another championship, which by all means would seem very logical. That's probably going to happen. But Andy, what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I've never heard of a driver contract having any direct link to the share of the prize money. I mean, that's always kind of been – I know that there have been incentives written in the driver's contracts before. You know, you get X, you know, in the part of the driver's or constructor's championship and you get, you know, Y bonus. You know, that's all fine. But to actually have it be specific to the prize money pool – that's something relatively unique. You know, obviously 35.5 million in whatever denomination is probably his market share. That's not surprising. The hands-on technical role actually also surprises me too. Obviously, you know, he's probably got an extremely, you know, keen F1 brain, but I'm almost wondering if he wants to be able to override strategy calls or something like that, and that's why he's pushing for it if he doesn't necessarily agree with him. So that could be something that's usually unique too, because usually when it comes to team orders and things, they're written into the contracts where, like, you follow them or you're fired. So, I mean, when they tell you to retire the car, you retire the car. If this is going against that, that is something I'd be surprised if it actually comes in. Just, you know, but it's a unique, this is a totally unique situation. It's a totally unique negotiation. We're probably not going to get the resolution for it until right before the car comes out. Like I said, I want to see him sign the contract, flip it over, put his helmet on and go testing. But, you know, that I think would just be baller. But, you know, other than that, I don't see a resolution in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, I read it as kind of maybe setting himself up for that next thing, kind of following the path of like a Niki Lauda and being more of that technical advisor, you know, post-racing. I kind of see maybe that being what he wants to transition into. And this is kind of the first step in that. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to kind of read in and to decipher what exactly.
Maybe he's already accepting the fact that he's going to lose a Nico Rosberg in the Formula E version of the off-roading, whatever, Rally E or whatever it is. Can't wait.
Yeah.
All right. So one last thing. I don't want to spend a lot. I really don't want to spend any breath on this, given this moron more press here. But earlier I was going through Twitter just seeing if we missed anything in show prep. And it looks like William Story himself and Rich Energy is teasing something, some kind of news drop that, of course, is not going to happen until tomorrow, the day after we record. But, yeah, I mean, he's always been kind of hanging around out there, hinting at things. It's some sort of joint announcement with OMG Racing. Who knows what it is? Hopefully it's nothing to do with Formula One again. But, I mean, if neither one of you have heard any more specific rumors about what it might be, I don't really want to.
Other than a cryptic tweet of his that said something about F1 in an announcement. So that's the only connection that I can see. I don't know why anybody would want to touch this guy or his company ever again after the crap he pulled the first time. But who knows? It's money. It's deep pockets.
Isn't OMG Racing like involved in World Superbike Racing?
It was some kind of motorcycle stuff I saw when I quickly Googled him.
Yeah. I believe it's World Superbike. So I don't know if he has been tweeting more frequently as of late to kind of keep himself in the notes. And a fun little note, he does follow actually the Outlap F1 podcast. That was interesting surprise. I don't know, one day last year.
Is that
year
his blue check
like
mark
but,
account or is it one yeah. that just has?
Oh, he's a huge day one supporter of Outlap F1 podcast, Andy.
Yeah.
Where do you think John got the rich energy from back in the day?
And hell, we need to hit this guy up for some bigger sponsorship. I mean, I'll drink it if he's paying.
He said he sponsored it.
Hey, I gotta say.
Well, he said he'd sponsor the show, but we had to send him $10,000 first, so we got a little sketched out. We're like, we're not doing this.
Well, you know, we did do that blind taste test, and James and I did pick straight up Rich Energy, so. It was the best out of the four that we tried. So,
for anybody out there who hasn't found it, I don't know what episode number it is, but look back in the archives. I remember I was listening to the show in the Merchandise Mart food court, cracking up by myself. I must have looked like I was insane listening to these two trying to taste the different energy drinks. It was great. It's great stuff. Go find it.
It was even more comical, too, because we'd had a couple of cold adult beverages, you know, prior to recording. So I definitely think that influenced us a little bit. But it's season one, episode 14.
Oh,
it's a short episode, but it is the Rich Energy blind taste test. So go check that out. It's quite comical. Lots of laughing and stupidity going on
back
there.
Back in the good old days. All right. So let's move on to we got a couple fan emails. John, take it away.
Yeah, so the first one came in from our buddy Matt Polanski, who asked wants to know our thoughts on old school Bernie Ecclestone proposing that Formula One go back to the V8s until they find their next powertrain and you know screw the next 3 years of hybrids and the decision making. Let's just go back to the V8s and figure it out in a few years. Andy, what do you think about this? You're an old school guy from the V8 era.
I mean, I don't mind the idea, but logistically, I just don't think it's going to make sense, particularly with the amount. If you're trying not to spend more money, now you have to redesign all your chassis again to take an old school V8, which is a heavier, tougher engine to marry to your chassis. So, I mean, logistically, it's tough. I mean, I love the idea. I would love to bring back V8 sound or V8 sound equivalent. Or V10 sound actually is what the one that I would love to have back in the sport because you need to have that element to it. But I don't see them going backwards. I even though as an old school fan, I'd love to see it, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think this is just pure fantasy for all the reasons Andy just said. Logistically, it could never happen. I think we're more likely to see sprinklers around a racetrack in the future before just switching to V8s randomly just to change them again. But yeah, nothing burger.
I mean, from a cost perspective, I think it could honestly be a wash. I mean, when you think of just how complex the current motor is, to go back to a V8 KERS, I mean, talk about, you know, simplifying things. That one came out a little weird. To a pretty drastic measure as opposed to what we currently have. So I think cost-wise, it may actually even save a little bit of money. But I just think in the grand scheme and the green, you know, proposal and all the stuff that F1's trying to go into, I unfortunately don't see it ever happening, but I mean, I've always had a love affair for the V8 KERS. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it just brings back a lot of fond memories of years past. So I definitely wouldn't mind it, but I don't see it ever happening. But I sure as hell wouldn't complain if it did. So it might be the first thing that Bernie and I had ever agreed on.
And you got another one?
And then the next one Yeah, the next one came in from Rachel Fleming. You can find her at Rachel7000 on Twitter. She asks, will Haas be patient with Mick Schumacher, or will they throw him out the door if he doesn't do well in 2021? James, what's your initial thoughts
on this? I definitely think they're going to be patient, especially when they start cashing the checks from all the merch he's going to sell. I think he'll have one of the longer leashes of a newer driver, besides ones that, you know, whose dads effectively pay for the entire organization. So I think he'll be all right. It would have to be comically, epically bad for him to only get a 1 year stint.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I think they're going to try to make a very nice Mick Schumacher-shaped bed for him to lay in that car. It's going to be tailored to whatever he wants. He's pretty much going to be able to get. He's going to be able to call his shot. He's got the backing of Ferrari. Ferrari has given Haas part of their factory and staff. And I think is the aerodynamicist. I can't think of his name. But anyway, they gave him an aerodynamicist to try to help the car. So they're doing everything to try to promote this guy's career. They're going to give him as much time as he wants. He has no pressure on him going into next year, other than the pressure he puts on himself, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I almost think it's almost like the opposite. It's, you know, how short will Schumacher's leash be? Yeah. Haas. I think Haas is lucky to even be in the same conversation as the name Schumacher. Like we've talked about before, I'm surprised that he's not in the Alfa Romeo, but I'm stoked as hell to see him in the Haas. I think it's going to be exciting. I'm finally going to have a reason to buy a Haas shirt, hopefully. I think that he, outside of, you know, like you guys said, outside of just an epic, flunking of his rookie season, I don't think that there's he's going anywhere. Unless it's Ferrari.
Yeah, that's a good point, John. Maybe that can be our CODA tradition for Outlap F1 podcast. Every time we go, somebody's got to buy a Haas shirt.
We got to do six laps.
Got to find the right one.
And then we do it.
All right. So thanks for those emails. Keep sending them in. Always appreciate those. But so now we're going to get into our next three teams of our deep dive reviews. And I think we'll start with you, John. And that'll be AlphaTauri. But first, we're going to take just a quick break, hear from our favorite sponsor in Manscaped, and then we'll be right back.
Support for the Outlap F1 podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, everyone. Manscaped has just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and all the time. Manscaped has been trusted by over 2 million men worldwide, so join the movement now for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. We already know that Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with a new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. The same signature scent that's in all the Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to your collection. It's light, approachable, and gentlemanly-like in all the right ways. Think of it as your roommate for the night on the town to keep you fresh and ready for anything. It's calming and inviting. This signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling in for an incredible woodsy and masculine finish. This 50 milliliter spray cologne is even hypoallergenic, cruelty-free, dye-free, paraben-free, and 100% vegan. It even comes in a beautifully designed glass bottle that makes a statement, and the manly scent sets the mood for any occasion. I've been personally using this product for about a month though, and let me tell you, it smells incredible, and my significant other has certainly been enjoying it as well. Right now, our listeners of the Outlap F1 podcast can get 20% off plus free shipping by using the code OUTLAP, that's OUTLAP, one word, at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com.
Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 47 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. I am your host, James, along with John and Andy. Quick reminder, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Reddit at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. And make sure you check out our website, www.outlapf1.com. Thanks again to Manscaped. We all absolutely love each and every one of our Manscaped products. Currently, we have been raving about the foot duster. Keep your feet nice and dry, especially in these colder climates up here. We want to wear a couple pairs of socks or maybe some wool socks. Tend to get a little sweaty, but not with the foot duster. So make sure you go check that out. Use code OUTLAP, OUTLAP, all one word. Get yourself 20% off and free shipping, as well as help out the show.
And just a reminder, they're shipping all across America all of Europe and now Australia as well. So you have no excuse. If you're listening to this, you are within range of a lovely Manscaped product. So get your hands on it.
Yeah, no COVID quarantine for the Manscaped stuff. It'll get there when it needs to.
Yeah, good shit.
All right, so we'll move on with our first team of three tonight. As I said, John, that's you with AlphaTauri. Tell us about their season.
Yeah, as just a reminder, we're going to do kind of a team high, or a deep dive into it and then try to dive into both the drivers as well for tonight. So part of round two, we start off with AlphaTauri. 107 points on the year. This is actually the most successful points or season for the team based on points alone. However, they finished one position lower than they were in the standings last year. So more points. However, the competition raised up their game and they finished position down. Fifth time in 7 years, the last 7 years that they've finished seventh in the standings. So they've got a nice little niche there, whether they like it or not. Clearly, the highlight of the year for them has got to be Gasly's shock win in Monza. Just a pretty epic race. If you missed it somehow, go back and watch it because it was a beauty. They scored points in all but two races this year, including a streak of 10 straight races of at least one driver in the points, which is the longest in the team's history. As far as qualifying goes, the team had 4 Q1 exits, 15 Q2 exits, and 15 Q3 appearances. Their best qualifying was 4th at Imola. Worst qualifying was 17th, which happened twice, both by Daniel Kvyat, if I'm not mistaken. The average gap as a team to their best potential pace was 2.14% compared to 2.10 in 2019 and 2.88 in 2018. So just a hair slower than they were last year as far as overall pace. The qualifying battle, again, like a lot of these other teams, wasn't really a battle at all. 13-4 to Gasly. And qualifying sectors was actually pretty close. It was a 26-25 victory for Gasly as far as qualifying sector battle. For race, they had 15 points that they scored in. Two double points finishes. Best finish, obviously, we mentioned it was first for Gasly and Imola, in Monza. They had 5 DNFs as a team, 26 laps led, completed 1,850 laps, which equated to 89.6% of the season, 996 laps in the top 10, and they had the 5th most distance covered on the season as compared to their competition. So not too shabby for the Honda motor as far as reliability goes. Guys, before we get into the drivers, anything stand out from a team perspective?
You know, coming into the year, we expected better things out of AlphaTauri. I think, at least for me, part of it was I was kind of caught up in the excitement of the rebranding, the new team. And I was expecting a decent year. And at a lot of different times, it felt like it wasn't that much better. But then when you take a step back at the end and look at their complete portfolio of work from this season, it's like, it actually was a pretty good year. They did a lot of good things. Obviously, that win was epic. One of the top seasons of the year for sure, or top moments of the season for sure. Overall, I was happy. I'm excited to move on from Kvyat and bring in Tsunoda. So I think they're trending in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, I think from a team perspective, this was always a team that, you know, you sometimes didn't notice them until you did. And it was like the shock win. Like, you didn't notice that they were really having a good year. And then, oh, boom, they win a race. So, you know, then you really have to take and pay attention to these guys. You very, very much kind of under the radar efforts, but solid, solid performances all the way around. They have to be very, very pleased, I think. One, that they've dropped the moniker of being the Red Bull Junior team. They I think definitely prefer being called a sister team. And I think you've seen that type of development now that they can kind of be in control of their own arrow and stuff like that. Equate to some really good results for them this year.
Yeah, I mean, considering that they had 22, if I'm not mistaken, more points than last year, and obviously a chunk of less races to obtain those points. I mean, but it just kind of shows you that the whole middle tier there of Formula One, everyone upped their game pretty much, and as they did too, but it was just enough to keep them slotted in seventh place. Moving on to the drivers, I'll start with Pierre Gasly since he is going to retain his seat for next year. He is tied for 10th in the points at 75. Qualifying, he won the qualifying battle 13-4. He had 1 Q1 exit, 5 Q2 exits, and 11 Q3 appearances. His best qualifying was 4th in Imola. Worst qualifying was 16th at the Tuscan GP. His average qualifying position was 10.12, and average starting position was 10.18. His average gap to his best potential pace was down 0.075, so actually pretty damn close to what he could get out of that car. And his average gap to teammate per sector in qualifying, he was over 0.2 faster per sector on average than Kvyat. So pretty damn impressive there. From a race perspective, he, again, finished, was 10th in the standings, scored 70% of the team's points, scored points in 10 races, only 3 DNFs. He completed 864 laps on the year, which is good enough for 83.32%. 580 laps of those in the top 10, 72 laps in the top 5, 32 laps in the top 3. He gained positions in 10 races, lost positions in 3, and finished exactly where he started in 1 race. So, guys, any what's your initial thoughts on Gasly when you kind of look through at these stats here?
Whatever was bothering him at Red Bull, he has put behind him. That is obviously clear. This was the bellwether bell cow for that team, dragged them into the position that they were. Obviously, he's got the one win. But these numbers, as you're just looking at them, I mean, this is solid effort. This is the Pierre Gasly that Red Bull thought they were getting, and for whatever reason have decided to move on from him. Whether or not that was the right decision or not, I mean, that's something, you know, kind of for the annals of time. But he had himself a great year, and he flashed in a lot of ways. This is a kid that's on the up. And if he can continue to build on it, he's going to be the team leader next year. He could have a really awesome season in 21.
Yeah, I mean, just an incredible year for Gasly. Came back to his original team, seemed to have a lot of pressure off him there, and really excelled. Obviously, that win is the moment of, I'm sure, his entire career life. When you look at the standings, I mean, finishing in the top 10, I have to say that's pretty good for an AlphaTauri. I'm sure he'd want better. He's like 22 points behind the ninth place driver in Lando Norris. So definitely some room to move up there for sure. But he looked like a completely different, more confident driver throughout the season. Definitely became more and more a fan of his as the season went on, surprisingly to myself for sure. But I think if he can continue to build on what he knows, he's clearly the number one there. He'll be the go-to driver for whatever they need. And now we'll see what he does with a brand new driver coming in. And he might be filling more of that mentor role a little bit, which could be a big deal for him. Other teams that potentially would want to bring him on in the future will probably take a look at this situation and see how he handles himself when he is the clear number one. So definitely a few different things to watch as his career progresses.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously still very young, so he's got – a lot of years ahead of him if he can keep things together. And I think you calling out, you know, Lando Norris there. I mean, you're talking about, you know, comparing him to a driver on a third place team. You know, that's pretty impressive to figure out, you know, just kind of where he is in the grand scheme of things. Obviously, he'd like to be further up the grid, but still really impressive from the guy. Going back and watching a lot of the highlights from him this year, I mean, he just made some incredible overtakes throughout the year and really kind of, you know, stayed out of trouble a little bit by reliability. But I think, yeah, he's definitely set up for a hell of a good season ahead of him. Moving on over to Daniel Kvyat, obviously in his last season with the Formula One team, he finished 14th on the year, only 32 points, unfortunately for him. So a pretty big drop down from his teammate. Qualifying, he had 3 Q1 exits, 10 Q2 exits, and 4 Q3 appearances. Again, that was quite a bit less than the 11 Q3 appearances of his teammate. His best qualifying was 6th at the Sakhar GP on the outer ring. His worst qualifying was happened twice, both in Hungary and in Turkey. He was 17th in both of those. His average qualifying was 12.12, average starting position 12.18. His average gap to his potential best pace was a 0.164. So, again, a little bit slower than Gasly's best potential pace, but still actually not that bad. And then we talked about, obviously, he did have a dramatic drop down as far as his average pace per sector in qualifying than his teammate. Races, again, his teammate had 70% of the points. Obviously, that means he had 30% of the points for himself. Best finish was 4th at Imola. He had 2 DNFs on the year. 986 laps completed, which actually came out to 95.08. So that really stood out to me. Really impressive that he had over 95% of laps completed on the year. 416 laps in the top 10, 50 laps top five, 2 laps in the top three. He gained positions in 8 races, lost positions in 5, and finished where he started in 2. James, what's your thoughts on Daniel Kvyat?
Yeah, I mean, Kvyat's a big part of the reason that we forgot about AlphaTauri a lot. He was kind of a ghost through most of the season, which I think is an improvement for him because nobody's really talking of him being the torpedo anymore. He's just kind of like a guy. But, I mean, his gap to his potential best pace at being over a tenth and a half from where it could be, that's not so hot. And you're starting typically in 12th place, about 12th place, and you finish behind where you started as often as he did. That's really not a good look. I mean, he raced a lot of laps, so that's a nice positive to throw out there for him. You could also say as a positive for him that he only finished a point behind one of the Ferrari drivers who was a 4-time world champion. So that's he can hang his head on that for sure. He's barely missing out on Seb Vettel. I can't say I expected more out of him because I really didn't. But just kind of like a very quiet goodbye to F1 for Kvyat overall.
Yeah, I would say too sluggish of a start to his season. He rallied. I actually thought he rallied pretty good in the second half of the season, but by then it was too little too late. Obviously, with Yuki Tsunoda waiting in the wings, whether he didn't feel the pressure or he felt it too late, it just didn't happen for him. It seems to me, just looking at these numbers, that his racecraft is still pretty good. It's his qualifying pace that just killed him. Too many times starting way too far back in back of the grid that just he couldn't recover from. So probably overall a tougher year. He's probably going to harder on himself. Obviously he loses his seat. So, those are things that just happen, but I would say kind of monumentally average would be kind of the way I would sum up his year.
Yeah. I mean the gain positions in 8 races looks pretty good on paper, but then, when you tie that into your average starting position being 12th, that seems, a little less impressive, unfortunately, when you put those two together. So, yeah, but overall, I think a pretty good year for the team, obviously set up, and I think they still have one of the most badass liveries on the grid. Love the Stormtrooper effect out there. So,
yeah, so I think that's a good job on AlphaTauri. So we'll go ahead and move in to Ferrari, my team. Finished the year in 6th place, as we've mentioned a few times. Only 131 points on the season, which was 373 less points than 2019. So that caused them to drop from 2nd to 6th in the constructor standings, which is their worst finish since 1980, which I believe.
Which is coincidentally the season that Deanna is on for the relap. So go check that out. That's especially all you non-Ferrari people like.
Yeah, that is a painful one. So. Yeah, well, just a heads up for any Ferrari fans, if you go in to listen to that season, what is it, a trigger warning for that one for sure. So I guess on the bright side for me, Charles Leclerc bested Vettel 98 to 33 in points. So Leclerc brought home 75% of Ferrari's points on the season. However, that is the lowest points total since 2009 when they scored 70 points amongst 4 different drivers there. So they never qualified in a podium position. 6 top 5 finishes in qualifying and only 14 Q3 appearances. So that is just not acceptable for a team such as Ferrari. No wins, also really not acceptable at all, with only 3 podiums on the entire season, 2 for Leclerc and 1 lucky one for Seb there, thanks to a mistake by Charles Leclerc at the end of the Turkish Grand Prix that we'll get into. So 6 DNS on the year, 4 of which were for Charles Leclerc. He won the qualifying battle pretty handedly, 13-4, killed him by sector 40-11 edge there. And then he also did, of course, win the race finish battle 10-3. So in an overall just really, really poor season for Ferrari, like I mentioned, the worst since probably 1980. Their high point on the season was kind of tough to find one. So I went with that when they announced Carlos Sainz to be their driver for next year, got me pretty excited. But it was, that was kind of tough to find one. Their low point, pretty simply just the season as a whole. So, I'm ready to move on to bigger and better things, hopefully for Ferrari. I know you guys probably have some things to say about their season, so I'll let you talk about the team overall before we get into individual drivers. John, the floor is yours.
No, I mean, it's, I'll save some of it for Deanna. Hopefully she's back next week. She can throw in a little bit of Ferrari hate your way. Wish she was on tonight. But, I mean, as far as, like, podiums go, I mean, clearly it should have been Leclerc for all three of those. They started the season on a nice little high there, and it just kind of trickled out from there. When you're sealed into an engine agreement with the FIA that you can't disclose and you're down on horsepower is unfortunately what you're going to get. So to see 373 points less, I mean, that was probably the most shocking when you said that. That's unbelievable just how much of a drop-off you've seen there.
This is a team that you could tell in testing in Barcelona, like after day one, you could tell that they just weren't right, and it never came together. And obviously, as we found out, they were way down on power, and that was the contributing factor that kind of hung over them the entire season. Also, it's a team that you could also tell had some boardroom issues, some power struggles at the top that kind of filtered down throughout the team, and you saw kind of that personified in the way that they would handle things. You know, the one arm of the team would be going in one direction, one arm of the team would be going in a different direction. And there wasn't unity and cohesiveness amongst the team this year. Just an absolutely not a good way to handle the Sebastian Vettel divorce. I mean, I've talked about this ad nauseum. So, I mean, I've already kind of said everything I wanted to say about that, but I mean, it's just not the way you handle it. And it just wasn't a good look. Just a team that really struggled. I mean, they did make some aero in gains throughout the course of the season. I thought their second half of the season was definitely better than their first half of the season, but, they're going to want to never, ever, ever watch that Italian Grand Prix again, never watch the corresponding, Tuscan Grand Prix again. Really for Ferrari, embarrassing results in front of their home, not in front of their home fans, but if the home fans were there, I would have hated to see what they would have done. Because it would have been brutal.
Yeah, it seems like.
Yeah, I think you. Okay, I was just saying. I think you did call out though. I mean, we obviously Charles looks like he's moving in the right direction for next year. It's going to be really interesting to see what he and Sainz can do together if they can get along with each other. But I think you're right, Andy. I mean, they did show improvement in that second half of the year. So they didn't officially give up on the season, which I think a lot of us kind of expected them to, and honestly, I don't know if I would have faulted them had they kind of thrown in the white towel and said, all right, we're looking at 2020 here. They did continue to bring aero and try new things. So I have to give them credit for that. Where they finished in the standings wasn't exactly where they wanted to be, but on pace and on paper, they definitely looked like a better team over those last like six or so races.
Yeah. I think most of the issues can be boiled down to leadership issues. And maybe stuck in their ways. I think somebody needs to come in that's a little more dynamic, a little more disruptive, and kind of move that team into a different direction. There are things that Pagano's good at, of course. I mean, he's in his position for a reason, but none of those have to do with actually running a team and managing a team, I feel. Like getting better with aero as the season went on, that's kind of more his thing. Like technical side, if he was in just strictly a technical role, I think I would be a lot nicer to him. But since he's the face of the franchise right now and he's leading the way, it's like he's not the leader I want. So I still want to move on from him. But unless something crazy happens, I'm sure he'll be our guy for 2021. So hopefully he can turn it around. I want to find reasons to like him, I swear. But as of right now, I'm still ready to fire him.
It's questionable.
Kind of not great. But to get into Seb Vettel, finished the season in 13th place with 33 points. Not a good season for Vettel. Definitely one that he wants to move on from. There was times this year where I really thought he was going to just retire because he didn't seem to be emotionally vested much at all at different parts of the season. So he did finish third in Turkey after Charles Leclerc went wide late in the race after he was trying to make a move and actually made a move on Sergio Perez there, but that didn't stick. He scored six other times. His best qualifying was fifth place in Hungary. His worst qualifying was 17th in Italy, the Monza race, which was Ferrari's 25th exit from Q1 in their history and the first Q1 exit at Monza for the Prancing Horse. So that is totally unacceptable. His average starting position was 12th, which is just kind of disgusting. His points is the lowest of his career in a full season. I think his initial year when he raced only like 7 or 8 times, he had less points, but not by much. So just not just an epically bad career year for him to finish out his Ferrari career there. He only finished lower in the grid than where he started 4 times this season and gained places 9 times, which sounds somewhat okay. But when you're starting in 12th place, that's just not where you should be starting. And when you're driving a Ferrari, his best moment, this was also tough to figure out. So I just gave it to him scoring points in back-to-back races in Hungary and the UK, which is kind of weird to think that that would be, you know, his best moment. But worst moment, I guess, besides the whole season again, finishing his career at Ferrari without a driver's championship. I know when he came to Ferrari, Vettel's real big into the history of F1 and things and was extremely excited to get a chance at Ferrari. And I'm sure he wanted to win a championship and bring a championship home for Ferrari more than anything. And he was just not able to get it done. Came relatively close, but ultimately could not best Lewis Hamilton, and then got a terrible case of the spins. And that was all he wrote for Vettel at Ferrari, unfortunately. So moving on to brighter pastures, Charles Leclerc finished in 8th place, 98 points, which not happy about by any means, but probably about the best I would have expected with how bad the car is or was. So his best qualifying was 4th. He got that 4 times. Leclerc is really good at qualifying, as he showed last year by having the most pole positions when he had, you know, a car that could actually keep up with some of the big dogs. His worst qualifying, though, was 14th in Turkey, which all around was just not a great weekend for him. His average starting position was about 8.47, so in between the 8 and 9 spot there. Only finished ahead of where he started 7 of the 17 races. He did score points 10 different times, so that kind of, I attribute that to, he was probably starting higher than he should when you look at the car overall. So more times than not, he was losing places. So, you know, for Leclerc, his progress this season can't really be understood truly by just looking at the numbers. I think he grew as a driver, as I've talked about a few different times in different season reviews over the year. I think he grew as a driver. And besides a couple immature moments, which definitely there was one that really comes to mind, I think he took more steps towards becoming a champion in the near future, which I still think he's going to get a championship before Max Verstappen, but I think I might be in the minority, at least on this podcast, in that belief. His best moment was 2nd place in Austria to start the year. Totally unexpected. My favorite race of the year, as I discussed last episode, and he's a big reason why. Getting that 2nd place to start the year was just awesome. His worst moment, the embarrassing one I mentioned a second ago, was when he rammed into Vettel in a PlayStation-type move at the Styrian Grand Prix after failing to reach Q3 for only the 2nd time in his career at Ferrari. So he was starting way back in the grid that race and went for a gap that just simply wasn't there. Something I do it all the time because I'm terrible at video games and racing games, but if I see that little hole going into a corner, I'm taking that shit every time. But I'm also not driving a multi-million-dollar machine at the time. I just have a controller in my hand. So a terrible circumstance for him to put himself in there. But besides that, I think he had a strong year. So I'm curious to hear what you think about Vettel and Leclerc, Andy.
I guess I'll start with Seb. You know, Seb's Ferrari career is just going to be always this giant mystery of, you know, he came in with such promise, and I remember vividly the practice in Japan when it was Vettel leaves Red Bull, and then the rampant speculation of where was he going? Well, he's going to Ferrari, and that was supposed to be, you know, German guy comes home, he's got everything he wants, it's all set up for him, and it just never materialized for him. And then the weird thing you mentioned, you know, getting the case of the spins. You know, the last couple of years, every time he would seem to get into some sort of hand-to-hand combat, he would always come out on the losing end of it. And in some ways, the physics of the spins just didn't make sense. Like, you wouldn't expect his car to do that or react that way with how he was going into those corners, but it would happen. So, yeah, I mean, just a tough year for him this year. You could clearly tell he got really deflated early once he found out he was out of the seat. And I don't know that he mentally ever really recovered from it throughout most of this year. You know, so we just didn't really see much in the way of a rally. He just was kind of there, and he just kind of finished out his term. Not a good way for a four-time world champion, in my opinion, to go out, but that's kind of what happened. Charles Leclerc, on the other hand, I thought did some out-driving of the car this year. That second in Austria is definitely a good example of that. I thought his pace at the Turkish Grand Prix right up until the last corner was very impressive. His qualifying effort at that race, he's had some really good qualifying a couple of times this year. So there's talent there. I mean, you know, his story is not yet told. Can Ferrari rally, put a decent engine in the car, and get a couple drivers who can kind of play off each other and get some stuff to happen? There's a lot of potential here. I mean, they're the big behemoths for a reason. That's not just going to go away with a bad year. As if Deanna was here, she would tell you Ferrari's had some bad years, and then the next year they'd go on to win the championship. So it can happen that quickly in Formula One. Interesting to see if it can happen in this modern era of Formula One, but they're going to have to rally to get back to where they expect to be, for sure.
Thank you, Andy. John?
Yeah, and I guess for me, I mean, there's two things that I think I'll always remember about Seb's time with Ferrari. The first one that always stands out to me is Singapore 2017. If I'm not mistaken, leading the championship at the time, starting at the front, has the gap pace on Lewis Hamilton. Everything's looking in the right direction. Obviously makes contact with his teammate and Verstappen all at the same time and tore that car up before they got to turn one in the rain. And then obviously the following year, in 2018 at the German GP, again, in wet weather, had the race win, looking like could potentially go on and maybe at least solidify a legit chance of winning the Drivers' Championship, and unfortunately slides off into the gravel pit. Those two things, I guess, will always stand out to me as just kind of what could have been at Ferrari, because they certainly had, I think, on pace to an opportunity to at least take the driver side of things, and it just wrong place, wrong time, things just didn't quite work out. So I'm sure he's looking on to greener pastures.
Nice.
no pun intended there.
I see what you did there. That's good.
Yeah, you like that. You like that. And then, yeah, I mean, Leclerc, I think the thing that stood out to me is when you talked about only finishing ahead of where he started 7 out of the 17 races. I mean, granted, he started 8th, so definitely about 4 places, 3.5 places on average better than his teammate. But that one definitely did surprise me a little bit. It seemed like so many times that car would handle and hold its own early in the races, and it would just drop like a freaking rock. And I don't put that on Leclerc. I mean, you could tell the talent that he had, because he was holding his own early in the races. But it's just like as the tires started going off, you could really start to see how hampered they were on power, and especially in the realm of DRS, and on the aero side of things, certainly trimming out the car a little bit more to try to make up for power, and then that just hinders you in the corners. You can kind of see that domino effect, and that certainly had to have contributed to him losing positions in so many places or so many different races. So again, I think not a terrible year for him. I still remember how much shit talking you were doing after Austria on that first podium. You made us all eat a little humble pie, but thankfully the world came back to the righteous place that it is, and we got to laugh at you for the rest of the year. So. But no, overall, though, I think not a bad year for Leclerc. I think for him, maybe not for the team, but for him personally, I think it's not one that he should be proud of what he accomplished this year and the strides that he made given the shit car. That
yeah, definitely. I when he did that to start the year, I knew that was going to be one of my few chances to gloat. So I definitely got my money's worth there. So I regret nothing. I think that's enough about Ferrari. As a fan of sports in general, I've been having not the best time lately, so I'd rather just put Ferrari to bed for that season and move on. There's always next year, so not the only team I have to say that about now, but
it's the Chicago sports motto right there. Yeah, there's always next year.
It comes true every once in a great, great while. But So let's move on to a team moving in the opposite direction of Ferrari. That's McLaren. That's Andy's main squad. Andy, break it down for us.
So McLaren finished, as we've talked about many times, third in the constructors with 202 points on the season. And that versus their 145 points in 2019 is an improvement of 57 points with three fewer races. 2020 saw multiple podiums for the team. That was the first time that happened for them since 2012. The qualifying battle went 9-8 to Lando Norris. The race battle went 9-8 to Lando Norris. The team's best qualifying position was second at the Italian Grand Prix. The team's best race finish was second at that same Italian Grand Prix. Carlos Sainz second at that same race was the highest finish for the team since Kevin Magnussen was awarded second at the Australian Grand Prix in 2014. It was their highest finish ever in the hybrid era. Consistent qualification leading to better race results, I think, was the theme throughout their year. McLaren was second only to Mercedes and Red Bull for the number of Q3 appearances in 2020. Only had both drivers not make Q3 one time, and that was the Turkish Grand Prix in the rain with the weird surface. Drivers were among the most equally matched on the grid, just 0.17 second per sector difference in qualifying between the two drivers. So tells me that the car was fairly even amongst both of them. Team personal high point for me, the Italian Grand Prix, P2 and P4, meant a 30-point haul for the team. That was their best in quite a long time. The low point for the team had to be the Russian Grand Prix, specifically lap one. Lando Norris finishing P15 and Carlos Sainz with a DNF going across the track and missing everybody except his teammate. So, yeah, that was not a good particular point for the team. Breaking down the drivers, we'll start with Lando Norris. He finished ninth in the driver's standings with 97 points. His average race result was 8.29. He raced more laps than any other driver this season. He recorded 48% of the team's total points. Only one DNF all season. That was the Eiffel GP, the race where I would just say help desk support just quite not enough. He found himself a deck chair to relax in, and I really couldn't blame him after watching his onboard for that race because he was doing some mega work with his hands. Really fast start to the season. Podium with a third position in Austria, followed up by a P5 at the Styrian Grand Prix. And this was the I'm going to get into the point that I was kind of teasing when we did our team grades. I think it was the combination of, one, the banning of race engine mode changes, which was he used a lot, I think more than any other driver on the grid, to defend. A front wing concept change really hindered his relative pace in the second half of the season. Also some really bad and poor luck. Three consecutive outside the points finishes between Russia, Portugal, and the Eiffel Grand Prix really saw him slip a little bit in the driver's standings. But overall, still, I still think a very solid year for him. Personal high point for me would have to be the Austrian Grand Prix. That podium, just the fact the Formula One was back, it was just like a perfect storm. I let out some major emotion that morning. I will never forget that. Personal low point had to be the Eiffel Grand Prix. Like I said, ending up on the deck chair a la Fernando Alonso with all of the memes that came along with it. Carlos Sainz, very solid year for him. He tied for sixth in the driver's standings with 105 points. His average race result was 8.94, led at two separate Grand Prix. The first laps McLaren has led since 2012 in Brazil, had more reliability issues than his teammate, raced 133 fewer laps than his teammate. Get him out of Belgium. For two consecutive years, he has failed to turn a single race lap. That's two consecutive DNSs or did not starts. So Belgium would be, James, if you're looking for Ferrari, Belgium might be a struggle for him. Bad stretch in the Tuscan and Russian Grand Prix with DNFs due to crashes, marking the first time he had recorded consecutive retirements since the 2019 Belgian and Italian Grand Prix. But his second half of the season after that was incredibly consistent. His last seven races were P5, P6, P7, P5, P5, P4, P6. He was the bedrock of that team, eventually getting P3 in the constructors. That consistency kept them in the fight all the way to the end. Personal high point for me for Carlos Sainz, second at the Italian Grand Prix, was a great final battle with Pierre Gasly. He just didn't get it. 0.4 of a second. But as I've said, if he's going to lose to anybody, I'd rather it be Gasly than anybody else. Personal low point, obviously, that did not start at the Belgian Grand Prix. You know, what do you do when you blow your engine on your reconnaissance lap? Can't do really nothing about that. But that was tough to take.
Guys. Yeah, so thanks for that heads up, Andy. Because looking at it, this year in the Belgian Grand Prix, Charles Leclerc only finished in 14th place, a place behind Sebastian Vettel, which was rare. So I think I'm going to let you guys know now, I'm not going to be on the race review for the Belgian Grand Prix next year. I think I'm going to be busy that night, so just go ahead and count me out. But besides that, I think for me, McLaren, I mean, pretty much accomplished everything I could want them to accomplish this season coming in. You know, finishing third place in the constructors is incredible for them. It should go a long way in providing them some extra funding that they definitely need, much like any other team during a pandemic here. So I think for Lando, definitely would have to give him the vote for the best new nickname on the grid this year. Last lap Lando, that was awesome. I think the nickname is pretty badass too, so hopefully that sticks for a little while. You know, I think it was interesting to hear your theory with what kind of happened to him in the second half of the year, because you definitely got that feeling that he kind of tailed off, kind of disappeared towards the second half of the year. But those things make a lot of sense. So maybe that could definitely be a big piece of that. Earlier, you mentioned him needing to do some like training, some weight training and stuff when he recovers from COVID. Hopefully when he recovers from COVID, that I could definitely see as well. Do you remember what point of the year it was when he was having those chest issues? Was that after?
That was the Styrian Grand Prix, and then the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Yeah, and I think that could play a part in that too. Like, he just needs to get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. But he's very, very young, so hopefully that's something that he's focusing on this offseason, getting himself both physically and mentally prepared for what should be, hopefully, be the longest season in Formula 1 history as far as race or amount of races go. Carlos Sainz. Yeah, I mean, still another good year. It's almost surprising to think that he still ended up in sixth place this season. There was times where I thought he wasn't quite where he should be. I thought he got overshadowed by Lando at times. I wonder if part of that was just McLaren was ready to move on. They knew Lando was going to continue on the team, obviously, and Sainz was moving on. So I don't wonder if he missed out on some of certain upgrades or maybe some more attention from the team. But overall, I'm super excited to welcome him to Ferrari. So I think he had a really good year this year. That second place finish was awesome. I think if there was just a few more laps in that race, he probably could have had the win there, or at least just gave us an incredible finish one way or another. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the direction McLaren's going. Obviously, it's all going to come down to how well they can transition into this Mercedes power unit. But they've got a hell of a team in the making here with Ricciardo and Lando. So hopefully they nail it on the technical side and they can still continue to move up this grid.
There's a couple of things that stood out to me from a statistical side of things that, which I thought was interesting. Looking at the qualifying and the race battle, Lando won both of those 9-8. But when you go back and look at points, Lando finished ninth in the points with 97. Carlos was sixth in the points with 105. Obviously only, 8 points between the two. And then their average race result, Lando was actually a little bit better on race result per weekend. So it shows you just how tight that was between these two drivers. And really all it took was pretty much the equivalent of one race where things went a little bit better for Carlos and a little bit worse for Lando, have such a point swing there. So, again, you know, we talk all the time about, you know, teammates, you know, working together as an actual team and for the betterment of the organization. And I think these two drivers were certainly, you know, the poster children for that dynamic duo. I certainly think that's going to continue in the next season with Danny Rick taking the leadership role there and kind of bringing Lando in under his wing. I definitely see nothing but good things, you know, in the future, especially if they can iron out the, you know, technical side of things, like you guys mentioned. You know, going into this season, you know, our biggest concern for Lando was, can he, you know, find that, you know, that aggressive side of himself and get his elbows out and really get racy and really get aggressive on track. And there it is, race one of the season, you know, earning the nickname Last Lap Lando. And we really, you know, although he definitely there was a little bit of tail off at there at the end of the season, like you guys mentioned. I mean, we definitely saw him fighting throughout the year so much more than we saw in 2019. So, I mean, that was the biggest impressive feat for him. Carlos, you know, he came out this week and said that he thinks that no driver on the grid would turn down an opportunity to race for Ferrari. I don't know if that's entirely true, but I see what he's saying there. I mean, Ferrari is an iconic brand. You know, certainly McLaren is up there as well, but I think, you know, Ferrari will always have a special place for anyone that has anything to do with open wheel racing. You have to be, you know, you have to appreciate what Ferrari's done and what their history as a sport is. So I definitely don't think that, you know, he's questioning his decision to go there. I think it's one of those that he said, like, probably at an early age, he made an agreement with himself. Hey, if I ever have an opportunity to race a Ferrari, I'm going to do it. And that certainly came true for this upcoming season. But I think he may take a step back. You know, in the long run of things, maybe he'll look back and say, yeah, I wish it would have happened, or wish it would have happened at a different point in my career. But all in all, just a really great season for both these guys.
Anything else, Andy?
No, I mean, I guess one last final point. I mean, I think this is a team that has finally gotten their financial house in order. They're building a new wind tunnel. That's still going on. So there's a whole lot of really exciting things to look forward to. Going to be interesting to see how the partnership with Mercedes goes. Does it change delivery at all? Papaya and silver. I'm all for it. So let's see what the artists can do.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I always get excited for all the liveries. And, like, I think you made a great point earlier when you're, like, some of these guys on Twitter that just do their, like, just for fun, make these liveries. I really wish that, like, what is the guy that you're always talking about, John? Like, Sean Bull? Yeah.
Sean Bull.
Somebody hired.
Yeah, I wish I had that kind of, like, artistic ability stuff in, like, anything.
Yeah.
it would be nice instead of just, like, an idiot meathead sports fan. But that's fine, too. But, yeah, so that wraps up episode 2 of our end of season deep dive reviews. The third and final episode obviously is going to feature the three teams we haven't talked about, that being Mercedes, Red Bull, and just a little bit about Williams. Probably won't go too deep into them for obvious reasons, but yeah, that should come out in about a week's time. Thank you for joining us tonight. You know, we always appreciate fans listening in. We've seen some really good numbers for this off season, so we want to keep that going. So make sure you tell a friend. If you could give us a 5-star review, that would mean the world to us. It really helps us out in the podcasting world for sure. And of course, if you need to get your area trimmed up, looking nice, go to manscaped.com. Use code OUTLAP, OUTLAP, all one word. Get yourself 20% off. Look good, feel good, play good. Andy, hit him with that line, and we'll talk to you next week.
Get yourself the most efficient arrow, and as always, may all your laps.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.